Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Ann Ball, Brian Lynn, and John Russell. Later, Ana Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, last year, more people than ever were refugees or forcibly displaced from their homes because of war, violence, or persecution. This information comes from the United Nations Refugee Agency's Global Trends Report. The UN agency said it found a record 65.6 million people were forcibly displaced at the end of 2016. That is about 300,000 more people than in 2015 and the most ever documented. The agency said its report shows one of every 113 people worldwide is either a refugee or has been forcibly displaced within their own country. By any measure, this is an unacceptable number, and it speaks louder than ever to the need for solidarity and common purpose in preventing and resolving crises, said Filippo Grandi of Italy. Grandi is the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. He has worked on refugee issues for over 30 years. The major reasons for the large number of displaced people are the civil war in Syria and the growing numbers of people fleeing South Sudan after the failure of peace efforts. The UN agency found 40.3 million people were forcibly displaced and living somewhere inside their own country. The number of refugees was 22.5 million. A refugee is defined as someone living outside their homeland because of war, violence, or persecution, threats of punishment, or bad treatment. The UN report said the world's poorest nations are taking up the biggest responsibility of housing and providing food for displaced persons. The UN report said 84% of all refugees are living in developing nations. Most of those fleeing from South Sudan have gone to neighboring Sudan, Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Central African Republic. The UN report called the large number of unaccompanied children asking for asylum a growing and difficult problem. Tragically, 75,000 asylum claims were received from children traveling alone or separated from their parent, the report noted. Grandi said he is worried that the United Nations has received only about 23% of the $8 billion it requested to deal with the continuing Syrian civil war. He told VOA he hopes the shortfall is not because the Syrians are forgotten and that the money will soon be made available. Grandi said the U.S. government gave $1.5 billion to the UN Refugee Agency last year, more than any other nation. The Trump administration has proposed cutting the government's $30 billion foreign aid budget by nearly one-third for 2018. At a hearing last week, Maryland Senator Ben Cardin said cutting foreign aid hurts suffering people, but also makes the world more dangerous for America. The Trump administration has defended the proposed cuts. In its budget proposal to Congress, administration officials said other countries must do their fair share as the U.S. works more on its own concerns and problems. While people continued to flee in record numbers, the UN report noted that around 500,000 refugees returned home last year. Another 6.5 million people who had been forcibly displaced returned to their home communities. But the report said many who returned did so in less than ideal circumstances and face an uncertain future.
British officials and Islamic leaders acted quickly to ease concerns among Muslims after an attack on a mosque early Monday. A man drove his vehicle into a crowd near the Finsbury Park Mosque in North London early in the morning. At least 10 people were injured. The mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, called the incident a truly horrific terrorist attack on our city. British Prime Minister Theresa May called it an attack on Muslims near their place of worship. Police are treating the incident as a terror attack. The incident outside the religious center follows three attacks inspired by Islamic extremists over the past 3 months. The violence has fueled a rise in hate crimes across Britain. The Metropolitan Police Service announced on Monday it was deploying extra officers on the streets of London to protect the public. May announced that police will examine the security of mosques and provide any help needed before celebrations marking the end of Ramadan, Islam's holy month. The attack happened early Monday when a speeding van hit people who were giving medical care to a man near the mosque. That man later died. A crowd of people gathered around the driver. Witnesses said the crowd began attacking him. A local religious leader, Mohammed Mahmoud, and a few men protected the suspect until police could take him away. "By God's grace," he said, "we were able to protect him from harm." Deputy Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu praised the actions of those who detained him. "What it proves to me is that Londoners will act together to protect themselves, but they will do so in a way that doesn't feed into terrorists' and extremists' hands," Basu said. Haroon Khan, Secretary General of the Muslim Council of Britain, said that based on reports from witnesses, the driver was motivated by Islamophobia. "Given we are approaching the end of the month of Ramadan and the celebration of Eid, with many Muslims going to local mosques, we expect the authorities to increase security outside mosques as a matter of urgency," Khan said in a statement. Tufik Kasimi, head of the Muslim Welfare House, told Britain's Sky News the attack clearly targeted Muslims leaving evening prayers during Ramadan.
But he said there was no need for the community to be frightened because police and government officials have been very, very supportive. I'm Anne Ball.
Investigators are looking into the crash of a U.S. Navy destroyer and cargo ship off the coast of Japan that killed 7 sailors. The USS Fitzgerald and a Philippine-registered container ship crashed early Saturday south of Tokyo Bay. The United States and Japan have since launched investigations into what might have caused the crash. U.S. Navy experts say collisions involving such ships are not common. Vice Admiral Joseph Acoin is commander of the U.S. 7th Fleet based at Yokosuka Naval Base in Japan. Speaking to reporters Sunday, he said the crash happened at around 2:20 a.m., as many crew members slept. He added that it is Navy policy to have some crew members keeping watch throughout the night. No bad weather was reported. Acoin said he did not know if crew members heard a warning before the crash. He also said he was not sure what conditions the 7 sailors who died faced.
So unfortunately, we don't have the details regarding the conditions during the final moments, but hope that the investigation may shed some light on that matter.
3 other U.S. crew members were injured in the accident, including the commander of the Navy ship, Bryce Benson. Benson was in stable condition with a head injury. The other sailors suffered minor injuries. Acoin praised crew members for fighting to keep the damaged ship above water and working to reduce flooding. He said the USS Fitzgerald can be repaired, but it will take many months. The much larger container ship, the ACX Crystal, suffered less damage than the USS Fitzgerald. None of its crew members were injured. Ralph Casa is president of the Pacific Forum at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Hawaii. He said the crash left many unanswered questions.
I'm sure there's going to be a significant investigation to try to figure out how something like this could happen. It was, you know, in the middle of the night, but still there's somebody on watch and in command of the ship at all times. So I just don't understand how a vessel of that size could have managed to end up colliding.
Casa said he believes the Navy ship was in the area after recently holding exercises with Japanese forces.
Normally, you wouldn't expect the destroyer to be out there all by itself. There would be other ships that it would be accompanying or involved with.
He added that the location, about 100 kilometers southwest of Yokosuka, Japan, has a lot of shipping traffic all the time.
This is a very busy waterway, which is why people are always supposed to be quite vigilant in watching out when they're operating.
He said that the ACX Crystal likely does not have the monitoring ability of the Navy destroyer. The USS Fitzgerald is one of the most advanced warships in the U.S. Navy. Such ships are equipped with modern monitoring tools that track other nearby ships. These tools can warn crew members of the danger of collisions. Vice Admiral Acoin said he could not provide information on what systems were operating aboard the destroyer at the time of the crash. Along with the warship's technical systems, the investigation is also expected to center on what crew members of both vessels were doing at the time of the crash. Another focus will be on whether the container ship was following international rules covering shipping traffic. The rules are included in the United Nations Convention on the International Regulations for Preventing Collisions at Sea. The convention provides guidelines on how to deal with many possible dangers. Among these are steps for how vessels should yield to each other when passing in order to prevent collisions. I'm Brian Lynn.
Christopher Larson learned he was not an American citizen while serving time at a prison in the United States. Larson, in his early 40s, had never thought of himself as anything other than a citizen. Born in Vietnam, he was 4 years old when he left the country.
The year was 1975. U.S. forces were still on duty in South Vietnam. Before the end of the Vietnam War, President Gerald Ford ordered a military operation called Operation Baby Lift. The goal was to help Vietnamese orphans escape from the country. Larson was one of those children. To be honest, I don't have any memories, Larson says. When I was a child, every time a plane would fly overhead, I would get scared and I would run. The four-year-old became the adopted son of an American military family. They agreed to take responsibility and care for him as their son. After his adoption, Larson was raised in what he calls an all-American family in Alaska and the U.S. territory of Guam. Larson received a Social Security number from the U.S. government. He also had official documents, like a green card. So he had no reason to think he was not a citizen.
As he grew older, Christopher Larson married, had two children, and moved to Seattle, a city in Washington State. At one time, I had everything I could possibly want, he said. But Larson started to have problems in his marriage. He drank too much alcohol. A short time later, his wife took the children and left. Larson said this made him very sad. He decided he would try to make a police officer kill him. He kidnapped a young girl and demanded money for her release. Eventually, Larson was captured and sentenced to 12 years in prison. News reports described his crime as one of the most cold and heartless imaginable. While in jail, Larson began working a job. He taught other prisoners mathematics and Japanese.
One day, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, officers learned about him. I was called into the counselor's office and they told me that I would lose my job in prison, Larson said. I wouldn't be able to do any educational services. Basically, all the rights that a typical inmate would have, I ended up losing because I was told that I have an order of deportation. Larson moved from a state prison in Washington to an ICE detention center. Larson's parents had thought he was a citizen through his adoption. But to the U.S. government, Christopher Larson was a Vietnamese national with a criminal record. Larson noted that he had registered for possible military service. This is a requirement for young men once they reach the age of 18. Larson said he had paid his taxes. So why couldn't I be a citizen? He asked.
Becky Belcour is the co-director of the Korean American Resource and Cultural Center. The organization directs the Adoptee Rights Campaign. Since the 1940s, some 350,000 children have been adopted from overseas by U.S. citizens, Belcour says. She notes that adoptive parents are responsible for getting citizenship for their children. Some parents did not know they were responsible. Others knew, Belcour says, but the citizenship process was so costly and difficult that they did not complete it. In 2001, the U.S. Congress passed legislation giving citizenship to children adopted from other countries, but only if they were born after 1983. In an attempt to get citizenship rights for those born before 1983, the Adoptee Rights Campaign is supporting the Adoptee Citizenship Act. Congress failed to pass the bill during the election campaign last year. Belcour says no members wanted to work on immigration issues. Activists are hoping to reintroduce the measure.
Christopher Larson was released from prison in 2015. He could be sent back to Vietnam if the government agrees to accept him. The United States does not have a return agreement with Vietnam that applies to Larson. In a 2008 agreement, Vietnam agreed to take back citizens who came to the U.S. after 1995. Whether a similar agreement that would apply to people born before 1995, such as Larson, will take place anytime soon is unclear. Since his release from prison, Larson has met several times with ICE agents. He now works at the nonprofit Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle. Now I'm stuck, he noted while speaking to VOA from the group's headquarters. I can't leave U.S. soil, so even if I wanted to visit my family in Guam, I couldn't do that because I would be crossing international lines. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. We may not need another study telling us that fruits and vegetables are good for our bodies. But research and studies can help us to understand how foods affect our bodies in good ways and bad. Researchers at the University of Southern California's Keck School of Medicine have found another great reason to eat more fruits and vegetables. They say that potassium-rich foods like sweet potatoes, avocados, spinach, and bananas could help to lower your blood pressure. High blood pressure, or hypertension, is an international problem. Experts at the World Health Organization say more than 1 billion people suffer from high blood pressure. The condition causes 51% of deaths from stroke and 45% of deaths due to heart disease. Health officials in the U.S. say heart disease and stroke together kill more Americans each year than any other cause. Years of research have linked sodium, or salt, intake to increased blood pressure. So officials advise people to use salt in moderation. Experts at the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say Americans get most of their sodium, about 75%, from processed foods and eating at restaurants. This is a good reason to eat fresh food prepared at home. Alicia McDonough is a professor of cell and neurobiology at the Keck School of Medicine. She led this recent study. McDonough says that eating less sodium is a well-known way to lower blood pressure. But she also says evidence suggests that eating more potassium may have an equally important effect on hypertension. For her research, she examined studies that looked at the link between potassium and sodium. McDonough found that people who ate more potassium generally had lower blood pressure, unconnected to how much sodium they ate. Her research suggests that the body does create a balance, using sodium to control potassium levels in the blood. When dietary potassium is high, she says, kidneys excrete more salt and water, which increases potassium excretion. This process cleans the kidneys. She explains that as humans evolved, they ate a diet rich in potassium, but low in sodium. This has led us to crave sodium, not potassium. If you eat a typical Western diet, she says, your sodium intake is high and your potassium intake is low. She adds that this greatly increases your chances of developing high blood pressure. McDonough published her study in the April 2017 issue of the American Journal of Physiology, Endocrinology, and Metabolism. Health experts at the CDC agree that eating enough potassium each day can help balance out some of the harmful effects that high sodium intake can have on blood pressure. However, they also say that eating less sodium is important as well. On its website, the CDC lists these fruits and vegetables and other foods as being good sources of potassium. Potato, baked with skin. Leafy greens, such as cooked beet greens, spinach, and Swiss chard. Bananas. Sweet potato, baked in skin. Fruit and vegetable juices such as prune, carrot, pomegranate, tomato, and orange. Acorn squash. Plain non-fat yogurt. Beans and lentils. Soybeans. And some types of fish such as salmon, mackerel, tuna, and halibut. But how much potassium should we eat each day? A 2004 study by the Institute of Medicine shows adults should eat 4.7 grams of potassium a day to lower blood pressure. McDonough says that eating about 60 grams of beans would provide 50% of that. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.